We're doing the Navi Yeshayahu. We're up to what's called the 13th chapter, the 14th Pasuk. The Navi had been describing the destruction that would come on Babylon after describing in detail the destruction that would come on Israel at the hands of the Babylonian Empire. The Navi went on to describe how ultimately God would destroy the Babylonian Empire. And the Navi continues in his description in Pasuk Yud Dalet, and he says, the Babylonian people will be like a deer that was chased out of his home. So once he realizes that his home is unsafe, he runs with all his might. He doesn't even know where he's going to run. He just runs. And that's the way the Babylonian Empire is going to be. When the enemies enter Babylon, people are going to run in every direction, and they won't know where they're running to. They'll just know where they're running from. Uchitzon, and they'll be like sheep, vein mekabetz, that none can gather. Once the shepherd loses control and they start scattering in every direction, so he's lost it. Ishelamo yifnu, veishelautso yanusu. They'll all run to whatever country they originally came from, wherever they migrated to Babylon from, and they'll all run back to that country. Kolanimtza yidaker. Because whoever will be found within Babylon will be pierced by the sword. V'chol anispe yipol becharev. And whoever's added to the city, whoever's come along to this and joined the city from other countries, will also fall at the hands of the sword. And the idea is that it's like Manhattan. When you have a city which is very prosperous financially, so people come and try to join that city. So Babylon was a city that was filled with guests. So you had, when the destruction came, people ran in every direction. Those that had migrated from other countries, so they tried to get back there, but everyone tried to run away. Yeah?
Two things. One, we're still talking about the Persian conquest?
That's what it seems. He doesn't identify it, but as far as we know, they're the ones who conquered Babylon. Yes?
Why is it such like a turnaround?
I said historically, right. Okay. I said I don't know how to rectify what history says with what the Navi says. Right. We have a lot of discrepancies between the Persian history books and our tradition on history.
Okay.
It's a source of much discussion. It's not clear whether the Persian history books are accurate. There's a question about how to understand them, but at the end of the day...
Is that saying that we came in and we came in with smiles and loving
right.
cars?
Okay. Right.
But
right, so it is biased, but there are issues which you wouldn't think they're biased about, which contradict our tradition. And the rabbis differ on what weight to give our tradition and what weight to give theirs.
What would an example of that be?
The number of years we were under Persian rule. We say we were in the Babylonian exile for 70 years. You read the Persian history books, there seem to have been many more kings that ruled over Israel before they sent us back to Israel. So the question is, was there really only a 70-year gap between the destruction of the first temple and the building of the second temple? So that's the question. Being that they believed in Zoroastrianism, so it could be that certain things were different in the way they calculated a year, and it could also be that they used multiple names for the kings, which is what the Talmud says in Rosh Hashanah. So then they list, this king ruled, this king ruled, and that king ruled. It could be that in some ways that was their way of making it seem like they were this pompous rulership. The truth is, even in Josephus, that wasn't so many years later. It's only a few centuries later. Josephus is pretty much in line with our tradition. That really brings the question why the Persians would write history books which recorded a lot of things that seemed to take place over about two centuries. Meaning, according to the Persian history books, we were in the exile for about two centuries before we went back to Israel. And that changes things. The book of Ezra describes that you had people who saw the second temple who had witnessed the first temple. Certainly doesn't sound like there were two centuries in between. So there are 160 years that are really unaccounted for. So we have a lot of questions because of Persian history books. Okay, that's a question. You know, I'm not saying which way to go, but the Navi definitely describes that the Persian conquest was not a pleasant conquest, and the Persians left us certain indications that it was a pleasant conquest. Again, Josephus sides with the Nevi'im, that it was an unpleasant conquest.
Someone tricked the Babylonian soldiers into celebrating something, and the Persians came in like one day and just slaughtered them all.
But slaughtered them all, meaning it's true. That's did we say it yet? The Navi Yeshaya describes how in the middle of the party, kumu asarim mishchum again. They'll suddenly tell people, hey, get your shields ready, we're being attacked. In the middle of a party. That is the description, that the victorious attack was while the Babylonians were in the middle of a party. The Navi Yeshayahu describes that.
Persona, predecessor, who do they all come from?
Paras and Madai are descendants of Yefet, no?
Okay.
I think it says, Pnei Yefet, Gomer, Umagog, Umadai, Ve'Yavan, Ve'Tirosh. So Madai is there, and Paras. I don't remember where Paras shows up, but Madai is certainly there. So again, that's where the Persian history books or the Persian artifacts from that period indicate that the Persians freed all slaves. Again, part of the indications we have that the Persian ascent to power was actually a pleasant one. But that's a good question, whether we were allowed to, or whether we were able to. Don't forget that our history in the destruction of the first temple and the destruction of the second temple was that we were troublemakers. Every time the Babylonian Empire tried to make peace with us, we would turn our backs on them and rebel against them. Same thing happened with the Romans, saying we weren't a people who you would want to give their sovereignty to. You know, if you were the king, that was one thing you didn't want to do, let the Jews have their sovereignty. And you see that when they let us go build the temple, so right away Haman's children came and said, you know, they're preparing to attack you. They're preparing a rebellion. And in Persia, they believed it. They said, stop, we're not letting you continue building. Right away, they sent word back from Israel and they said the most plausible lie, but it was plausible. They said, you know, they're preparing barricades, they're preparing fortification, their plan is to regain sovereignty and stop paying you taxes. To which the Persian king right away said, no more building. So it makes sense that even if they give the Jews their freedom, they wouldn't let them go back so fast. Our history wasn't so pleasant. We weren't such faithful subjects at that point in history. Pasuk Tetzayin. One?
Which is a good thing, like according to what our character should be.
Next.
To some degree, because Chazal didn't agree. Meaning some of these things, like the Roman revolt, was against the advice of the sages. Sometimes the sages said, recognize that they were given power from heaven and be subservient. Now's not the time.
If you could practice Torah, right? If you had certain rights.
Huh.
But what's I don't understand the difference between that and practicing Torah and Shabbos and everything in Brooklyn. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we have an ideal. Don't we go to every extreme measure possible in order to achieve that ideal?
No. No, we have guidelines in halacha. When when should we take which measure? Right? It's not.
Right.
Okay. So that's why you need a rabbi to guide the system. It's not, you can't just say, you know, that was one of the issues with certain movements in the last few decades that took up arms and did all kinds of action. And it wasn't so clear that there was any rabbi that was really guiding them. And then you could end up in many places. Pasuk Tetzayin. V'olileyem yirutishu le'eineyem. The Navi is describing how the youngsters are going to be broken. In other words, murdered or smashed against stones opposite their eyes. Yishasu ba'ateyem unsheyem tishachavna. Yishasu batehem, their houses will be plundered and their women will be raped. Hinini me'ir aleihem et madai. Behold, I am arousing the Mede Empire against them. The Mede Empire was unusual in their cruelty. Asher kesef lo yachshovu v'zahav lo yachpetzuvo. They don't value silver and they're not interested in gold. They're interested in taking over the empire. And so the Navi is describing that the Mede Empire will enter with extreme cruelty. He doesn't mention the Persian Empire, maybe because the leader, the king at the time, was Darius the Mede, Daryavesh the Mahdi, and he led the two troops together. There was a certain pact between Persia and Mede, and he's describing that it was a very brutal conquest. Again, the Persians leave us different artifacts. They record it a little differently.
Mandai was the first point that they were
cruel,
came the Persian that was better, and they say that.
And the bows of the lads will pierce, they will break as they fly and hit their mark. So the bows will pierce the youngsters of the Babylonians, and they will have no mercy over the fruits of the stomach. Even the youngest child will be seen as an enemy by the Medes. Even when they see small children, they will have no compassion. And Babylon, which was considered the prime nation, they who were called Tiferet Geon Kastim, the glory, the pride of the Kastim, they will be Kemapechat Elohim Et Sedom Veet Amora. Just as God overturned Sodom and Amorah, so too their time will come and their glory will set. They're just as the son of the Babylonian Empire will set, Loteshev Lanetzach, they will not continue till eternity. They think that their golden era will keep going. No. Velotishko Nadovador, they will not continue for generations to have their communities settled. Velo Yahel Sham Aravi. On the contrary, they will have such desolation that even an Arab nomad won't stop there to pitch his tent. And even the shepherds won't bring their cattle to graze there. Different wild animals will frequent the communities of the Babylonian Empire, meaning they're going to become ghost towns where the only inhabitants will be wild animals. Vishachenu sham benot ya'ana usirim yirakedu sham. And the ones who will live there will be benot ya'ana, some type of bird, and se'irim, which can either mean wild goats, or our tradition is that se'irim is a reference to demons, will dance in the desolate houses of Babylon. And the wild animal that's called an iyim, some kind of wild animal, will call out against his castles. The word over here, alminotav, is a reference to arminotav, his castles. But you could say that, being that the castles will be desolate, so they'll be like widows. Vitanim beheicheleoneg, you're going to have a tanim, which is some type of snake, will be the only inhabitant in these chapels where people would have places to pleasure themselves. All that fine silk and fine sofas and everything that was there is now going to be the resting place for snakes. Vikarov lavo ita. Its time is soon, is near. Its days will not last long. So the Navi warns that the destruction of Babylon is imminent. Right now, All we see is how Babylon keeps going up and up, and ultimately they're going to destroy Israel. The Navi says, well, you should just realize that Babylon's day is also coming. It's not so far off. And when Babylon's day comes, so then similar prophecies about Babylon, where the children will be taken without mercy, the women will be taken without mercy, the cities will become desolate, wild animals and snakes will be the ones filling the palaces, there will be no remnant of the great glory of the Babylonian Empire as the Medes come with their cruelty and bring it down to its knees.